Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. But, of course, we don't only focus on here in Washington. We like to bring you news from all across the nation, particularly when it's the inside scoop that the mainstream media is not talking about. And one of the most interesting stories that has not gotten a lot of focus from the mainstream media is what's going on in the nation's heartland, specifically in the state of Kansas. Now, Kansas is a very Republican state, despite its new Democratic governor. It's a state that went overwhelmingly for George W. Bush in 2000. It is a red state surrounded by red states, if you will, the heart of America. And there, on local school boards, we find that Kansans are electing people who want to change science, or at least the way science is taught in schools. You see, it's the old evolution-creationism battle. You might think that that had been resolved, but it hasn't been. They are still fighting over these issues today. And so I want to go and talk with two very special guests. One is Jack Krebs. He's a public school teacher in Kansas who is also the vice president of the Kansas Citizens for Science. He's going to tell us what's going on there. And the other person is Nick Matzke later on in the hour. He is the public information project specialist for the National Center for Science Education. And we're going to talk in general about this evolution creation battle. And, of course, it dates back 75 years to the infamous Scopes monkey trial back in Dayton, Tennessee. But apparently the battle is continuing today, and so we're going to talk about what's going on in Kansas, what's going on across the nation, and how it matters. I mean, why does it matter if we teach a little bit of religion in our schools? How does it affect kids? Is it against the law? Lots of questions, and you, of course, are always welcome to join in. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. Call toll-free 877-57-SCOOP. And you can also send an email to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. Or you can comment on the blog. A lot of you have already done that. We'll be reading some of your comments through in this hour. Before I get to the story in Kansas, though, I got to crow a little, got to brag a little, because I watched 60 Minutes last night. And lo and behold, one of our favorite guests here on the Inside Scoop was the main story. Main story on 60 Minutes, a formerly little-known translator low down in the FBI, accusing the FBI of incompetence, corruption, and most importantly, spies. Actually, people in the FBI working against U.S. interests. That, of course, was Sybil Edmonds. She tried to tell her superior. She was fired. And no one came and listened to her story, but she came here on the Inside Scoop. And at the time, many of you, some of you conservatives out there, were saying, Mark, these are all conspiracy theories. If this were a big story, mainstream media would have picked it up. Well, I'm proud to say that it has. And finally, Sybil Edmonds is getting the national attention that her story deserves. And that's, of course, what we do here on the Inside Scoop, whether it's Reverend Moon's coronation in Congress, whether it's Bush's being absent without leave from the military, whether it's cooking the books on intelligence. These are all stories that we try to bring you here on the Scoop before the mainstream press picks it up. And one of those stories, I think, is now going on in Kansas. We've seen very little mention of it, at least out here in Washington. But it seems that quietly, or maybe not so quietly, the anti-evolutionists are taking over Kansas school boards again, trying to instill religion into scientific teaching. Now, you may think, again, this was resolved back in 1925. On a very hot day in Dayton, Tennessee, when biology teacher John Scopes was put on trial for teaching the works of Charles Darwin. This trial, called the Scopes Monkey Trial by the press, featured prominent lawyer Clarence Darrow, probably the most prominent lawyer of his day, opposing William Jennings Bryan, three-time presidential candidate, who took the Bible a lot more literally than John Scopes. That, of course, that trial is there's a very famous play called Inherit the Wind, which is based loosely on that trial. But in 1925, it was seen as a showing that in America, or particularly in small towns in America, we were very backward. We were still focusing on religion instead of focusing on science. Believe it or not, these issues are still being fought today, at least in Kansas. And I should say not just in Kansas. I don't plan to pick on Kansas alone, but in states across the nation. And here to tell us about it is our first guest. As I said, his name is Jack Krebs. He's a public school teacher in Kansas, and he's the vice president of the Kansas Citizens for Science. Jack Krebs, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
And thank you for inviting me, Mark.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit of the history here? I understand this isn't the first battle in Kansas over this matter. When did the issues of evolution, creationism, when did they first pop up in Kansas?
Well, here's a very brief summary. And first of all, let me point out, you said local school districts, but we're actually talking about the State Board of Education.
Fair enough.
And the state science standards, which have become one of the places for the creationist movement to focus on, is changing science standards, because nowadays, with all of the accountability and education, standards are a very important part of education, state standards. And so the science standards are a real weak spot to be attacked, and that's what's going on in Kansas.
When you're talking about national standards, you're referring to the No Child Left Behind Act?
Well, the No Child Left Behind Act has made accountability important at a national level, but for many years that's been going on at the state level also. So science standards in general, often drive the state assessments that become important for accreditation, et cetera. There's a whole educational line of thinking there. The point is that the standards are a place where the creationists can get their foot in the door without going through the standard channels of getting what they're trying to do established as science, because science standards are subject to political activity. They're essentially they're okayed by state boards of education, and so a lot of politics can come into play. So the point here is that this is a state standards issue. That's where the pressure is being put.
Okay.
That's why the State Board of Education elections are important.
Well, why don't you start with the history of this?
The history is that in 1999, when the state was going through a routine updating of science standards, it turned out that we had a majority of people on our school board that were sensitive. They liked creationism, mm-hmm. and a citizens group got pushing for creationism, and through some behind-the-scenes shenanigans, long history, we got the infamous science standards of 1999 passed that de-emphasized evolution, took out the age of the Earth. They were very much a young Earth creationist product.
So what did those standards say? I mean, did they just take out evolution?
Well, the creationists make a distinction between micro and macro evolution. They don't have a problem with antibiotics becoming resistant to certain, or bacteria becoming resistant to certain antibiotics. What they believe can't happen, hasn't happened, is that species have evolved. They call that macro evolution. And, you know, it focuses on the idea that human beings come from pre-hominid creatures. That's what the one key thing they don't want to admit. But in 1999, it was biblical literalists who believed the Earth is 6,000 years old, believe everything was created at one time. Those were the people that took charge, and we passed standards that were really the worst science standards that probably any state in the country had ever had. And, of course, it created a national and worldwide firestorm. We were the laughingstock of the world. And the citizens of Kansas responded in 2001 by electing new board members that were pro-science, and we got rid of all those bad standards.
And that would have been back in 2000.
At 2000.
Now, apparently, they're coming back.
They are. And 2 years ago, through really negligence on the part of the pro-science people, a couple of creationist board members got elected, sort of along the stealth lines. And then this time around, it was very much up front. It was a 5-5 split going into the primaries. And in this one race, a lady who stood for not only creationism, but no new taxes for education. Education can do fine with the money it has. Pretty conservative overall agenda, to say the least. She won pretty big.
Now, when you say under stealth lines, so are you saying that she mostly focused on her tax provisions?
No, that was two years ago.
Okay.
The people that got in, the evolution issue was not really hot.
They admitted to being creationists, but it wasn't discussed very much.
It wasn't really much of an issue. The conservatives sort of didn't see it come. I mean, the moderates didn't see it coming, and the conservatives got a couple of new board members elected.
Now, when you say conservatives and moderates,
Kansas is really sort of a three-party state.
Okay.
We have the conservative Republicans, the moderate Republicans, and the Democrats.
Okay.
And really, there's more divisiveness between the conservative and moderate Republicans in the state than there are between the moderate Republicans and the Democrats.
Interesting.
So the politics in Kansas is really this three-party sort of triad type of thing. And in this particular case, we were running a conservative Kathy Martin, a conservative pro-creationist, versus a moderate Republican who's very much pro-science. And the conservative creationism, she was for no new taxes. She was very much against No Child Left Behind.
Well,
she brought a conservative agenda on several different fronts, and one pretty big.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, just sort of get to the brass tacks here.
Yeah.
What does this mean, okay? These new, you now have a conservative majority, right? 6-4 on the board?
It will be 6-4 starting in January. That's
starting in January. What have they announced that they plan to do on the issue of evolution
well,
and creationism?
Well, the other part of things that's going on here is that we are also at a new round of reviewing the science standards. So the science committee most likely will produce good, solid science standards. But that committee's work will not be okayed until next year, and that means that the creationist majority will have the final write-off on those standards. And they have no compunctions. There's one board member in particular who has no compunctions about undoing the work of these committees that the board themselves selects.
Well, let me ask you, I guess, a broader question on this issue.
Does that answer the question? That what we can see coming up is that this majority could very well insert on their own various kind of creationist ideas or take out evolutionary ideas despite the work of the Science Standards Committee.
Okay, and I want to go on later a little bit and talk about evolution versus creationism and
right.
the theories and so forth. Let me just ask you a broad political question about setting school curricula in Kansas and probably across the country. I guess it's state school boards that set the curriculum, and it strikes me that it wouldn't just be a question of science taught different ways. I grew up in Tennessee, and certainly I think the war between the states was taught differently in Massachusetts than it was in Tennessee. You have literature. There's all kinds of things to focus on in literature, whether it's, you know, The Scarlet Letter or
you know,
To Kill a Mockingbird.
It's interesting you mention that, because the same board member who was responsible for the creationist standards in 1999 is right now doing the same thing to our history standards. The committee brought him, the board, a set of standards, and he is wanting to de-emphasize international relationships and the governments and economies of other countries in favor of emphasizing the United States and Kansas history.
Now, does this go on in everything?
Subjects, you are right.
I mean, it makes me wonder if math is the only subject that's not subject to political intervention. I don't know. Maybe that one, too. I can't think of any.
No, actually, that one, too, but that would be a digression, because then you have the problem-solving versus learn the facts.
Okay, but those are at least educational arguments rather than political arguments. You know, what's the best way to teach children kind of arguments. To me, I guess that's fair. But what's really interesting to me is when you have these politics taking over the science. And I want to, I guess, first of all, make clear that we are talking about solid science here. What do you do with the people that say, well, you know, evolution is just a theory, and like the Big Bang Theory, it's just a theory, and maybe it was all created, as the Bible said, maybe not in 6 days, but over 6 periods of time. How do you respond to those people?
Well, the most central argument that I think the Science Standard Committee has to take is that curriculum standards need to represent the most fundamental and mainstream ideas in the field that they are representing. In this case, no matter what all these people say about the possibility of various kind of biblical or religious type of things happening, that's not what is understood throughout the world about science. And so there is no good reason for science standards, which are supposed to aim at fundamentally accepted positions, to be addressing things that are not accepted by the mainstream.
Well, let me ask you this. It seems to me, and I know a lot less about Kansas school standards than I do about the law and constitutional law in general, but I am aware of the First Amendment saying Congress shall pass no law establishing religion. And yet, my understanding is that would not prohibit a school from teaching, for example, comparative religion. They could go and they could say, well, you know, the Hindus taught the world was formed this way, and Christians taught it's formed this way.
Absolutely not. That would not be a problem.
Okay. So you could, in other words, you could teach creationism as a matter of, this is how the Christian religion teaches that the earth was formed. This is how the Hindus teach it. This is how the Greeks taught it, and so forth. You wouldn't have any problem with that.
Oh, absolutely not. There's a very important distinction that I need to make about something that you just said.
Yeah.
That there are many, many Christians that have no problems whatsoever with evolution. biologically very many. And so it is definitely a mistake to see this issue as science versus Christianity or science versus religion, because many Christians have no problem with evolution. There is a subset of Christianity that, for various reasons, the young earth creationists obviously don't accept science. But there's another group of people, the intelligent design people, that don't accept science on slightly different grounds. But this, I don't want to throw in any way, sense, or form, all Christians or Christianity in general as being up against evolution here.
Okay.
That's an important distinction.
Fair
to
enough.
Make.
Fair enough. Let me give out the numbers again so that listeners can join in. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com, or as many of you have already done, you can comment on the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. If you got a question for Jack or for me, if you agree or disagree, we always welcome your calls. Jack, it's interesting, you mentioned intelligent design. Now, I was kind of under the impression that's sort of just the newfangled name for creationism, that intelligent design sort of sounded better, was better market tested. Is it really a different view
of
creationism?
Well, no, it is a new name for the creationism, but the thing we have to distinguish between here is young earth creationism, biblical literalism, which believes that the earth was made 6,000 years ago, et cetera. And really what's an old earth creationism, that is a position that accepts the age of the earth, accepts that there has been this string of creatures that have been alive over 3.5 billion years, but doesn't believe that evolution can do it, thinks that God has to have stepped in some number of times in some number of places. They're very, very indistinct about that. And so there is sort of a distinction there that between the creationism that's not necessarily young earth. Now, the intelligent design movement, because they don't want to lose the young earth people as part of their movement, are ludicrously vague about this age of the earth business, because they really want there to be a great big tent that sort of encompasses everybody that's against evolution. But there are sort of two brands, young earth and old earth creationism, that we have to deal with.
Well, let me tell you, I actually had a science teacher in a private school where they can teach whatever they want. And as I was in sixth grade, her view, which was that she believed in evolution, that evolution occurred, but she argued that there was a intelligent designer, if you will, some force, God or otherwise, behind it all. In other words, the science of evolution was exactly as the scientists say, but in fact, it was directed by a God or an intelligent being. How would that theory mesh with your views and the views of creationists?
Well, there's two parts to that. One of them, that is a mainstream Christian idea.
Right.
Not necessarily about just evolution, but about life in general.
Sure.
Most Christians believe that God is present at all times, and we don't see him performing little miracles to show that he's here, but he's here.
Okay.
And that many, many Christians, those who accept evolution as part of science, believe exactly as you just said. What science sees is the physical manifestation of that. Now, this goes back to a question that you asked and then I didn't get back to, is this idea about a theory.
Yeah.
You know, in science, a theory is not just a guess. You know, oh, it's my theory why the Red Sox have never won the pennant. That's not what a theory is in science. A theory in science is a very well-established, well-accepted explanation for a large body of facts. And the theory of evolution is, in fact, the theory that is accepted. To call intelligent design a theory is wrong, because they have not in any way come up with any of the details, much less tested those details. So they're not really a theory. And
well, how do you argue with those that say, well, you know, theories of science change? We used to believe that gravity was, you know, the most powerful force in the universe. That's what Newton taught. And then Einstein came along and showed us that there were more powerful forces. How do you respond to those people?
Of course, theories change. But theories change. Theories change through science. That is, additional facts are raised, different interpretations of those facts are raised, and eventually those facts are tested against more facts until the body of scientists come to accept that shift. That's how science changes.
Now, I've seen some creationists that argue, at least, that they are based on science, that they can find a piece of wood from Mount Ararat that shows Noah's Ark, and that maybe God implanted the fossils. I don't know. Maybe to throw off you scientists.
Right. And the intelligent design arguments about that are more sophisticated than that kind of thing. But the key fact here is, even though they say that, they have not really established it, number one, and they certainly have not convinced the scientific community. This is why this goes back to the role of boards of education. You've got to earn your wings in the science community before you're allowed into the public school curriculum. They're trying to jump the gun because they're playing politics, not science, and going straight to boards of education because they know that they don't really have the goods. They have not come anywhere close to convincing the scientific community that they do have such evidence.
Okay, Mr.
That's where the work for them needs to be going on.
We need to take a quick commercial break.
Sure.
When we come back, though, I'm going to ask Jack Krebs about how does this affect the Kansas school child? Why does this matter? How does it affect someone sitting through 6th grade or 10th grade science? And I also want to give you a chance to call in during the commercial break. It's very easy to do that. It's a toll-free number, 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. We'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop on how Kansas is failing to evolve right after these messages.
What's wrong with you people? Don't you know that the economy is humming? That our very own president has declared mission accomplished on his promise of prosperity? That the stock market is up by 40% over last year? That jobs are cropping up like crabgrass? That the bluebird of happiness is officially singing everywhere across our land? And that you should be grateful, for God's sake? Republican politicians, corporate economists, and the media barons are totally befuddled these days because their economic statistics tell them that the economy is in great shape. Yet you wretches, are still grumpy, even giving Bush the lowest marks of his presidency for his economic stewardship. George himself has gone into one of his high-pitched whines, chastising those who can't see the sunshine. He's sounding a whole lot like his daddy did back in 92. Like he's just another rich son of a Bush who is totally oblivious to the realities of America's workaday majority. He's looking at rosy economic indicators handed to him by his political operatives, rather than looking at such real-life pocketbook indicators as jobs that only pay poverty wages, gasoline topping $2 a gallon, milk at $4.43 a gallon, health care costs rising 3 times faster than wages, and 401ks being shrunk to 1ks. Also with their heads in the clouds are such media powers as the New York Times, which recently bemoaned the public's economic gloom, referring to it as a mood. A mood? Your job's being downsized or offshored. Your kids can't afford to go to college. Bush is trying to cut your Social Security benefits and raise your retirement age to 70. And they think you're moody? Meanwhile, a clueless Republican Senator, Jim Talent of Missouri, blithely says that prosperity is everywhere, but, quote, it just takes a while longer for that to filter through to folks. This is Jim Hightower saying, filter this, Senator. We'll believe the economy is humming when we are.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
You know, out here in West Texas, it gets really hot, and it's a tough, dry heat.
Glenn Austell of Lubbock, Texas, talks about Gold Bond medicated powder.
When I'm working outside, my skin gets itchy and irritated. I guess you call it a heat rash or something like that. But Gold Bond relieves the itch and irritation. It gives me a cool, refreshing sensation. I'm telling you, once you've tried Gold Bond, you can't live without it.
Gold Bond medicated powder cools and soothes heat rash and irritated skin. Use it directed.
I mean, who wouldn't want to feel cool and refreshed?
Well, Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, bringing you news today from Kansas, from the heartland of America. My guest, Jack Krebs, is a public school teacher in Lawrence, Kansas, and he's trying to fight the school board, the state school board, that's just recently been elected, and looks like they're going to change scientific standards. Now, Mr. Krebs, are they going to say that creationism can be taught alongside evolution? Do we know what they're going to do yet?
Well, no, we do not, and there's a lot of water to flow down the river before anything becomes finalized. The Supreme Court has always already made it clear that certain kinds of creationism would be totally unconstitutional, but the intelligent design movement, which is quite aware of that, I think is trying to navigate into something that would not be illegal, perhaps, and it's going to be a tricky road. So the question you mentioned at the before the break, I'd like to come to.
Sure. The question, of course, was how does it affect the average Kansas school child? Why does it matter if they get a little dose of religion in their science class?
And the part of the answer to that question is that already, both in Kansas and really throughout the country, many, many science teachers teach less evolution than they should because they are concerned about community uproar. Protest, people being against evolution. The fact that in this country we have this misconception that evolution is in some way anti-religious causes science teachers all over the country to downplay evolution, irrespective of what their science standards say. This is a vicious circle because then we get all these people coming out of school not understanding evolution to perpetuate the problem. So we've all
not just what's going on in Kansas.
Oh, it's absolutely a national issue, and this is and the ID movement is a national movement. I think Nick's going to be talking to you about that in the next segment.
He is. Let me just get quickly to a caller. Our time's going to be up soon. Let's hear what the caller has to say. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Jack Krebs.
Hey guys, how you doing today?
Hello.
I'm concerned that if Kansas does this, like you said, it's going to become a national thing, and I don't understand how we can just completely disregard science. And say, okay, well, intelligent design it is. Like, I don't want to see this go into Kansas schools just as much as I don't want to see it come into Jersey schools or Washington schools or any school. And what can the public outside of Kansas do to stop this from happening?
Jack, any ideas?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, here's a plug. I'm vice president of Kansas Citizens for Science. We were one of the first citizens groups to form in the country, and now there are probably 10 states that have citizen science for groups of different formats. People ought to start getting together now before this shows up in your backyard. There's a book called Creationism's Trojan Horse by Barbara Forrest and Paul Gross that outlines the national ID movement. And I'm willing
ID
to bet,
meaning intelligent design.
Yeah, intelligent design. I'm willing to bet that in any state in which science standards come up for review in the next few years, this issue will arise because this is a national issue and there are national forces that are providing background and encouragement for local people to do this.
Who are these people, Jack? Who's behind this?
Well,
the Christian Coalition, Jerry Falwell? I mean, who's pushing this?
There's a group called the Discovery Institute in Washington. Again, the Creationist Trojan Horse outlines the whole deal. They have been funded by conservative religious Republicans for a number of years, and their goal is to defeat materialism. Their goal is to create a society that is theistically based.
I don't know about defeating materialism. It seems to me that all these Christian conservatives support the Republican Party, which is all about supporting the rich.
I mean materialism in the philosophical sense.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
They believe that that too many people believe that God is dead, so to speak, and they believe that this is because people have come to believe in evolution, which is all wrong, and therefore they have focused on evolution as the subject by which to try to establish that God exists. And their goal ultimately is to create or to move us towards a society that represents a very narrow theistic religious viewpoint.
Now, of course, the First
Anybody
Amendment
concerned about this ought to start learning about what the Discovery Institute is doing.
Of course, the First Amendment specifically prohibits the establishment of a state religion, and it sounds to me like that's what they're trying to do. Is that fair?
Well, but I think you know that there are many people in this country on many issues above and beyond the evolution that want certain kinds of theistic concepts to be a part of our world. Their Ten Commandments issues, their values issues. This, you know, irrespective of what our Constitution says, there is a lot of movement in this country to blur that distinction between separation of church and state.
Caller, anything more?
No, thank you, guys.
Thank you for your call. I appreciate that. Jack, I just got one more question, then we're going to go to commercial. I'm going to bring Nick Matsky on the line. And that is this movement, this evolution versus creation movement, is it different from whether it be vouchers or prayer in schools or Ten Commandments posted in the courtroom? Are these all the same people, or is there some difference in the creationism movement that's worth exploring?
Well, there certainly are some relationships, and it's all part of sort of a central core. But this the evolution group is a group that really is focused on this idea that the philosophy of where did we come from, that the theory means that we weren't created by God, which is the wedge that they want to produce. They are really interested in this particular approach. So it's not all a unified, unilateral group, but the overall, there's lots and lots and lots of connections between this issue and a lot of these other issues that want to blur some of the distinctions between church and state.
And why do you think it's happening in Kansas versus any other state? What about Kansas?
Well, it's happening in Kansas because, number one, we had the elections and we were sitting at a 5-5 split, and so everybody knew that if just one creationist could win, they could go back to a majority, and we still have the people on the school board that were responsible for what went up and happened in 1999. So we were just an incident waiting to happen.
And last question, do you happen to know where the president stands on any of this?
I think the president is the creationist, but I'm not.
But he hasn't publicly expressed that one way or the other that you're aware of.
No, I'm sure there's some quotes out there. I'm going to guess that that's the side that he supports.
Okay, fair enough. Ms. Krebs, you've been terrific to come here on the Inside Scoop. I appreciate your telling our listeners this story. And when we come back, we're going to have Nick Matsky on the air. He is a public information project specialist for the National Center for Science Education, looking at the trends across the nation that Jack Krebs told us about in Kansas. You won't want to miss it, and if you want to call in and ask, all you have to do is dial toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You too can join in the debate. We'll be right back.
Time for another Gooberhead Award, presented periodically to those in the news who have their tongues going 100 miles per hour, but who forgot to put their brains in gear. Today, I've got a whole nest of goobers for you, all of whom are nesting in the fraud-ridden Pentagon, except when they fly that coop to feather their nest with top jobs at Lockheed, Boeing, Halliburton, and other corporations that pocket billions in bloated Pentagon contracts. The scam of such goobers is to work a while at the Pentagon, gain insider knowledge and contacts, then peddle their insider connections to corporations wanting more fat contracts from us taxpayers. Take Pete Aldridge, who has made a career of spinning in and out of the revolving door between the Pentagon and military contractors. He was Secretary of the Air Force, then, whoosh, whoosh, he left to become president of Air Force contractor McDonnell Douglas. Then, whoosh, whoosh, George W. brought him back inside to be in charge of all Pentagon purchases. Last year, whoosh, whoosh, he left again, this time to become a highly paid board member at Lockheed. But just before leaving, he personally approved a $3 billion contract for 20 jet fighters to be made by, you guessed it, Lockheed. Even while Pete's on Lockheed's payroll, whoosh, whoosh, Bush named him chairman of a Space Exploration Commission. Pete's commission recently called for privatizing NASA. Guess what corporation stands to gain the most from such a move? Bingo, if you said Lockheed. About his glaring conflicts of interest, Pete simply declares that he's in compliance with current ethics laws. But of course, these laws are shams, written by lobbyists for goobers like Pete. Legal isn't the same as moral. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn more about this nest of goobers, call the Project on Government Oversight, 202-347-1122.
Hi, this is Doug Dupuy for SelectQuote, and I just called
Cheryl Payne,
one of SelectQuote's licensed agents.
Hi, Mr. Dupuy.
Hi, Cheryl. Why buy term life insurance through SelectQuote instead of somebody else?
Well, Mr. Dupuy, about 2 out of 3 people have health or lifestyle issues. Could be, depending on what insurance company you choose, you could overpay life insurers to match you with your best buy.
Got an example?
Sure. I just matched a man 40 years old who takes cholesterol medication with a $500,000 policy for under $22 a month.
Quite a match, Cheryl. Why not let SelectQuote match you with your best buy? Just call 1-800-772-8300. That's 1-800-772-8300. Or log on to SelectQuote.com.
Example is First Colony Preferred Best Colony 10-year term policy form 1420 and 1421 et al. Underwritten by First Colony Life Insurance Company, a GE Financial Assurance Company, Lynchburg, Virginia. Policy subject to underwriting approval, available in most states.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about Kansas and more generally the plot, if you will, the scheme, the agenda of religious conservatives to put some religion in our science standards across the nation. We've been talking with Jack Krebs, a public school teacher in Kansas, vice president of the Kansas Citizens for Science, about what's going on there. And now I have on the line Nick Matsky. He's the public information project specialist for the National Center for Science Education, and they focus, obviously, on the national trends. And I guess my first question for you, Nick, is this problem one that's mostly in Kansas, or are we seeing it across the country?
It is a national problem. We have, at the National Center for Science Education, we track flare-ups, we call them, incidents that occur at the local level, at the local school board level, at the state level, and also occasionally at the national level in national legislation. So, and we have had, right now we're monitoring a number of flare-ups.
How many states are we talking about? 5, 10?
We're watching stuff in 12 states right now.
12 states?
Yeah.
I'd be curious, are they mostly red states?
Levels of activity, it goes up and down.
Are these mostly the red states, or we find some blue states in there?
It does tend to be more conservative states, but we recently had one flare-up in California, which is a strong Democrat state, so
sure.
It really varies, and because many times it's at the local school board, it can all depend on what the political situation is at a very local level.
Can you give us just some examples? We were talking at length about Kansas of what's going on in other states that's particularly egregious.
Sure. For example, I'll discuss a couple of things that happened recently.
Okay.
One was in Darby, Montana, which is a small town in Montana. And what happened in Darby was that a local minister went to the school board and he said that he would like to get a policy passed before the school board. And in that particular case, the policy was that teachers in the Darby School District are encouraged to help students assess evidence for and against theories to analyze the scientific strengths and weaknesses of existing scientific theories, including the theory of evolution. So there the language was, analyze the scientific strengths and weaknesses of the theory of evolution.
Suggesting, really, that it may not be much of a theory at all.
Exactly. And this kind of language is very common where, because creationism was basically ruled out by the courts in the 1980s, and even intelligent design is very suspicious before the courts because it's really very similar to creationism, a very common tactic that we're seeing is this sort of selection of evolution for special criticism. And so you'll say, okay, all of science is good, except we don't really like evolution, and we just want to put in some extra criticisms of it.
In fact, let me read to you an email I got. And by the way, if you want to email me, and I'll read your email on air, just send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com, or feel free to call in toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. This is an email from Wesley. Wesley writes pretty much what you were saying, Nick. He says, creationists and ID advocates want to act as if every issue is always open to argument. While science can't determine if something is ultimately true in some sense, it can determine that some proposition is false. Special creation was hashed out and found to be wrong back in the 19th century. The Earth is about 4.5 billion years old, and no amount of political action will make it only 10,000 years old. I take it you agree with Wesley, huh, Nick?
Oh, yeah, that's accurate.
Okay. Let me go on and ask you about the law. The reason why the law prohibited, and specifically the Supreme Court, prohibited teaching creationism, I assume was because it violated the separation of church and state. Is that right?
Yeah, it violated the Establishment Clause. And the key decisions there were 1982, McLean versus Arkansas, and that was a court ruled out a balanced treatment statute that said you have to give creationism and evolution equal time in classes.
So if the Supreme Court has ruled that this is a violation of the Establishment Clause, the First Amendment says you can't teach religion in public schools as if it's some scientific truth, why aren't all of these statutes going to be challenged in the courts? Why won't they all be struck down?
Well, anything that explicitly mentions creationism isn't going to fly. We know that already. That's established law. Intelligent design is probably going to go the same way. If it makes it to a statewide policy, for example, and it gets challenged in the court, it's very clear the connections between the people who write the intelligent design stuff and the traditional creationists. So that will probably go the same way. However, what if somebody passes a policy that just teaches some bogus criticisms of science? Is it against the Establishment Clause to try to
debunk the theory of evolution?
Yeah, to teach bunk science, basically. That's an open question, legally speaking.
Well, how do scientists determine? I mean, obviously, and you know, Jack Krebs and I talked about this a little bit. Theories do change. Newton's theory of gravity was certainly simplistic compared to Einstein's later theories. I mean, what if it wasn't the Big Bang? What if there's some other theory? I mean, we should have the right to debunk science, shouldn't we?
Everyone has the right to think whatever they want and say whatever they want, but the question is, what do you want to teach in a public school? You've got to teach something, and you've got to ask yourself what the point of public education is. And in a science class, I think, and I think most people think, that the point of high school science, for example, is to teach the basics of the science as it stands right now. And essentially that means teaching the scientific consensus. And in biology, the scientific consensus is that evolution is the core theory.
Nick, hang on. I want to go to the phones. If you want to join in this discussion, all you have to do is dial toll-free 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Nick Matzke.
This is Ed from New York.
Yes.
And I just want to tell your listeners about something. I was traveling down south in the early part of the summer, and I happened to go through Dayton, Tennessee.
Okay.
And at the Dayton, Tennessee courthouse, they have a big exhibit about the Scopes trial, because that's where it took place.
Right.
And it might be interesting for your listeners to go and take a look at the Dayton, Tennessee courthouse, because it's one of the most interesting exhibits on creationism and the Scopes trial.
Did they express a view down there on whether evolution is good science or not?
Well, that gets to be a more interesting question. In Tennessee, education is statewide, as I understand it, and I'm not exactly sure how they go ahead and teach it there now.
Okay. Thanks for that information on Dayton, Tennessee. It should be very interesting for anyone that goes down there. Thanks very much for your call. Hey, let me ask you this, Nick, here from Jim in Newport, Rhode Island. And Jim writes that that the national parks are selling a book claiming the Grand Canyon is only 5,000 years old. Are you aware of this? Is that true?
Oh, yeah. We've watched that one as well. That was a recent issue. It's quieted down now. But basically, the situation was that in the National Park bookstores at the Grand Canyon, there was a book called, I believe it was The Grand Canyon, A Different View. And it was kind of there were a number of short essays by a bunch of young earth creationists, sort of the old-fashioned kind of creationists. And the book was put together by a guy who was a rafting guide who had converted to creationism, evidently. And so the book contains a lot of pretty pictures. It's sort of a coffee table book. And then there's various short bits of creationism in there. And so the protest was that does this really fit with the mission of a national park, part of which really should be to teach science, you know, and the science of the Grand Canyon. And of course, the Grand Canyon is famous with creationists because for whatever reason they've fixated on that particular landmark as something that they want to go after.
Why do they want to go after the Grand Canyon?
Well, because when you go to the Grand Canyon, you can see all of these layers going down, you know, it's several thousand feet down to the bottom of the canyon, and these rocks get older and older as you look at those layers moving down, and down at the bottom you have Precambrian rocks, which are billions of years old. And so it's a very visual, when you see that, it's a very visual demonstration of just how old the Earth really you know, hundreds of...
blog here that goes along with my show. Lots of people. In fact, we've already got a couple dozen comments on this show already. And the bloggers talk amongst each other. And by the way, you're always welcome to add to the blog yourselves. I like to have a wide audience there. And actually, they came to an agreement, if you will, the conservatives and the liberals on the blog, and that is that religion should be taught in public schools, but taught as religion. In other words, you could teach the history of Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism. You could teach...
It's pretty well established that that's all right. Because you're not establishing a particular religion if you compare and contrast various religious views. And it's important for students to know, just in terms of world politics, for example, what are these different religions and, you know, what are their fundamental claims.
So your complaint, just to be clear, is masking religion as science.
Yeah, and it's very clear that the thing that's behind all of this creationism, the old-fashioned young earth creationism, the new kind of intelligent design creationism, the real fundamental concern is essentially a certain group of conservative Christians that are afraid that evolution undermines morality and religion. And I've got a good quote, for example.
Well, now explain this to me, because maybe I just don't get it. How can evolution undermine morality? I mean, whether you're a good person, whether you kill someone or steal something, how does the theory of evolution make you good or bad? Explain that to me.
Well, I'll let them say it in their own words.
Okay.
There's a fellow of the Discovery Institute, who Jack Krebs mentioned. That's the institute that's behind a lot of this intelligent design stuff. And her name is Nancy Piercy, and she wrote in 2002, "Our view of origins shapes our understanding of ethics, law, education, and yes, even sexuality. If life on Earth is a product of blind, purposeless natural causes, then our own lives are cosmic accidents, and there's no source of transcendent moral guidelines, no unique dignity for human life," and it goes on and on. So basically, if evolution is true, then God didn't create humans, then there's no purpose for human life. And
it sounds to me like
that's kind of the train of logic that undermines all of this.
Their faith is basically based on the rejection of science. They can't, I mean, as Jack Krebs pointed out, there are plenty of Christians and people of all religions who have strong beliefs in God and at the same time accept the theory of evolution. These people apparently can't. Evolution destroys their idea of God. Is that what the problem is?
That is essentially it. And that is really almost every major intelligent design creationist writer that you look at, if you look very far, you will find that this is really what is behind it all. This is the fundamental motivation for it. And you can find endless quotes to this effect, but, you know, that was a good one that I gave. And that really explains why they feel like it's important to get this into a science class, not just comparative religion. Because if it's comparative religion, they say, well, then all these ideas are being treated equally. And that doesn't really accomplish their goals.
They don't just want religion.
Fact, and they want that to be taught.
They don't just want religion. They want their specific religion.
Exactly.
Taught. Now, let me ask again how it affects the students. I mean, they're going to go out into college where is it taught differently? For example, there are all kinds of religious colleges. I know Brigham Young University. There are a number of Catholic institutions. Do they teach evolution?
It all depends on the school you go to. I went to a Lutheran school, Valparaiso University, which is in northwest Indiana. That's where I went to college. And their evolution was accepted, and it was no big deal. And the professors said the professors were mostly religious, but for them it was not a big deal incorporating that into their evolution. But it all depends on the school you go to. Most of the Bible colleges, for example, are pretty much young earth creationist.
Now, are there tests on all this in Kansas and elsewhere? Are there national tests that test evolution?
There is a lot of testing, and especially on science subject tests, and especially because of the No Child Left Behind Act, which has mandated a lot of testing. That's part of the reason that we're seeing a lot of activity now, is the No Child Left Behind Act mandated testing and standards to be established in each state. And so everybody has to take these tests, and so somebody has to write the standards, and that gives an opportunity for creationists to go for their agenda.
Now, are any tests actually including doubts on evolution?
Not to my knowledge. I don't think there's any approved tests that are doing that.
But if a child learns doubts, then if they express it on a test, they could get an answer wrong, I guess, right? I mean, if they took the ACT or the science AP test and it said, it talked about something on evolution, and they said, no, that's not true, it doesn't happen, I guess they'd fail the test.
They would get those questions wrong. But really, it's not important. So education is not about forcing anyone to believe anything in particular. If a student is creationist and they don't want to give up those beliefs, that's fine. all that education asks is that they understand what the scientific view is. And so they should be able to answer questions on a test and just say, this is the mainstream scientific view. And they can accept it or not. That's their own free choice. No one's going to challenge them on that.
Nick, hang on. We got one more commercial break. When we come back, we're going to finish up this discussion and play what I thought was the very best part of John Kerry's speech at the Democratic National Convention, the part where he dealt with issues of faith. That and more when we come back.
Bush and gang came into office claiming to be morally superior to the sexually crass Bill Clinton. They took special glee in highlighting Clinton's reprehensible attempts to parse the legal language of what constitutes sex, pointing to Bill's infamous contortions over what the definition of is. But, holy hypocrite, look who's doing legalistic contortions now. Parsing not-to-excuse personal sexual memos now show that all of Bush's top lawyers were straining at the bit to unleash the CIA and military forces to break both U.S. of war. One in particular, a 2002 memo by Jay Bybee, top legal counsel in Bush's Justice Department, went to extremes to claim that in grilling detainees, the Bushites could use practically any torture methods short of killing prisoners without violating either our own nation's torture law or the Geneva Accords. Bybee's memo went into excruciating detail to parse such terms as severe pain, imminent death, and profound mental disruption. The memo concludes that only physical pain as intense as you would expect from organ failure or death qualifies as torture. Short of that, anything goes. The same anything-goes mentality that corrupted Enron and most of corporate America now is loose at the highest levels of government. It just shows that if top officials unleash crafty lawyers to justify the most despicable actions, they will. By the way, George W. has subsequently put Bybee on... It just shows that if top officials unleash crafty lawyers to justify the most despicable actions, they will. By the way, George W. has subsequently put Bybee on the U.S. Court of Appeals, where he can apply his anything-goes mentality to all the cases that come before him. This is Jim Hightower saying, we need a president who will choose lawyers of conscience, not of convenience.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know birth.
Your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about evolution. Believe it or not, yes, this is an issue that's still a political issue. The Scopes Monkey Trial of 1925 hasn't put the issue to rest. Still in Kansas and 11 other states, the issue keeps popping up. My guest is Nick Matzke. He is with the National Center for Science Education. Nick, I want to read to you some of the emails that I've gotten on the program and sort of get your response to a number of them. Mm-hmm. I got an email from Fred in New York City, and Fred writes that there's a common misconception that science describes reality. It doesn't. It's an approximation, Fred says. It's just a system for predicting and measuring natural phenomena. When we reach points where the system doesn't work, we ignore it. Fred writes, science is a tool, not the truth. You can measure distance in both centimeters and inches. Neither is correct. They're just a useful tool. Religion is a different matter. Religion is reality. It is truth. It's not something you can easily toss away. One of the strengths of the nation is that you can believe any religion you want, including none at all, and no one can tell you otherwise. Since science is simply a tool, it doesn't conflict with any particular religion, and if it does conflict with your religion, you've just found one of the many where we tell children what religion is the right religion. I suspect there's some things you agree with and some things you disagree with in what Fred just said.
Yeah, that's a very pragmatic view of science, but I think it's a little bit extreme because a lot of scientists will say, yes, we're just building models of reality, but in many ways we are dealing with truth in a practical sense, you know, that science really is about finding things out. You know, it really is true in a meaningful sense that the Earth goes around the sun and not the other way around, for example. So I think, you know, comparing it to inches versus centimeters, that's a little bit too loose. I think science is definitely about model building, and it's always possible that some part of science is incorrect. But really, once we've tested and retested the main theories, they become very well supported, and they become very good models of reality. And essentially, it's truth in a very practical sense.
Here's another comment by Wesley. He writes, "Our society is increasingly based on technology. Poor teaching of science means the economy will ultimately suffer. We already are seeing a shortage of students from the United States taking up careers in science and engineering. And creationism teaches students a view of science that just doesn't work. This includes such things as evidence against evolution, which is simply the criticisms of evolution that creationists have always made." But then I have a comment here from Gordon in Smith Creek, Michigan, and asks about scientific theories like those of Velikovsky, who I'm not aware of, but maybe you are, Nick, that give scientific answers to biblical events. Can those be taught? For example, Velikovsky argues the passing of Venus close to the Earth may have caused the parting of the Red Sea. I myself have certainly heard theories that when the Jews crossed the Sinai in the Exodus, that maybe it was a drought period and the waters split in that case. Could that be taught?
Well, dealing with Velikovsky, for example, I won't go into the whole thing, but he's essentially a nutcase from long ago, and he was called a catastrophist, and he had all kinds of crazy theories about that tried to explain old legends. But really, most old folk tales essentially don't need that kind of explanation. They just grow gradually over time.
I see.
So you don't need to postulate that Venus, you know, moved out of its orbit and somehow went by the Earth and all kinds of essentially impossible physical events. So really what you want to teach in science class is mainstream, well-accepted science. That's in a high school science class, that's really what you're going for, because I think in this day and age, everybody needs a basic education in what's the basic scientific understanding of the world in order to get along. And I'll give you one good example where this is
okay,
really
be quick, because our time's running out, and I still want to play Carrie's speech. Go ahead.
Just briefly, the new field of biotechnology, with all this genome sequencing that's going on,
right,
all of that is based on evolutionary theory in the beginning.
Interesting.
Because if you look at a gene sequence and you want to know what it does, what you do is you go to a computer database where they've got all these gene sequences from different organisms, and you can just compare, and you can say this gene sequence is similar to this other one, and that means they shared a common ancestor, and that means that they probably have a similar function.
Very interesting.
It's a core thing.
Nick, we're going to have to end it there. Well, you're talking about an interesting subject. An hour really flies by. Nick, thank you very much for coming here on the Inside Scoop.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me.
Before we close, I do want to play a part of a speech that John Kerry had to say at the Democratic National Convention about faith. It expresses my view very well, and I think it was really a very profound thing for him to say. It got the largest amount of applause of anything he had to say. Let's listen in.
And let me say it plainly. In that pause and in this campaign, we welcome people of faith. America is not us and them. I think of what Ron Reagan said of his father a few weeks ago, and I want to say this to you tonight. I don't wear my religion on my sleeve, but faith has given me values and hope to live by from Vietnam to this day, from Sunday to Sunday. I don't want to claim that God is on our side. As Abraham Lincoln told us, I want to pray humbly that we are on God's side. And whatever...
I think that I distrust him for that. I distrust Osama bin Laden for claiming that God is on his side. Allah is on his side in doing the destructive acts that he had to do. God is on our side has never been persuasive to me. That's no more, frankly, it offends me when people in baseball and football games, each one says that God is on their side. I think that's ridiculous. I think the best way to approach religion is this way John Kerry does. That is to pray, as with Abraham Lincoln, that we are on, if you will, religion should be a standard of morality and truth that we seek to accomplish instead of trying to basically lord our religion over someone else. Perhaps we could humbly try to approach these standards ourselves. That's my view, and I'm afraid that's it for the Inside Scoop. I hope you'll tune in tomorrow. We've got Election Tuesday where I debate the Republicans. We're going to talk about the economy, the Swift Boat ads, the race in Illinois, and all kinds of things. Hope you'll tune in tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. This is Mark Levine, signing off.